generally, we would classify the restrictions on basar v'chalav as a chayk. The nations of the world live very comfortably without having formulated the necessity for such legislation. Laws against theft, murder, etc., torts exist in every society. Society finds them necessary to be able to function. But basar v'chalav, water, would seem to be a chayk. I'll just share with you, we believe that even a chayk ultimately has some reason, at least some lesson that we can learn from it. So there's a very beautiful article by Rav Kook, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, and I will present his thesis in very brief fashion, because tonight is not a shiur on hashkofa, it's a shiur on halacha. But let us ask ourselves one question. We know that the admonition against basar v'chalav is repeated 3 times in the Torah. But yet it's a very strange admonition. Lo sevashel gediv b'chalav imo. It seems more a poetic statement than a legal statement. Legally, lo sevashel basar v'chalav, period. End of discussion. What is the statement, lo sevashel gediv b'chalav imo? It's a very poetic way to say it. And by and large, I have not found that the Mefarshim have picked up on this. The Torah is very direct into the point, my chalas says, loy seichal, etc. Is that loy seichlo? And here, a statement for a poet. Is that a pshat? And according to Shas, it's hardcore halacha. 3 lavin in basar v'chalav. Achila, eating, kano, and cooking basar v'chalav is also a lav. Rav Kook Zatzal has a thesis that all the Marishan reflected the perfection of the world. Whatever happens after the Chet of all the Marishan is in a degraded world. And ultimately, with the advent of Mashiach, the world will return again to the exalted state of all the Marishan. So Adam HaRishon, as we know, other than the fact that he was entitled to bring karbonos, but he was not entitled to eat meat. Etc. But he wasn't entitled to eat meat. The only use he could make of animals, l'chara, was for karbonos. We use animals constantly, or allowed. Torah specifically authorizes us to. Yet Rav Kook Zatzal says, with the advent of Mashiach, we're going to go back to the Mauritian state. What's the pshat, he says? The Torah gives significance to all life. Human life, animal life, and from Rav Kook's perspective, even the life of a flower. Alleged that he was once walking with someone and the person mindlessly plucked a flower off a tree and he turned white. Why? Because he lessened it. It was from a tzomeach to a doimah, from plant life to the absence of life. So why should one lessen an aspect of the bria without need, without purpose? If we take it for use by the other, by a human being, so we're elevating it to another, to a higher step of the creation. But just to mindlessly degrade it, why should a person do such a thing? The Torah does not want us to degrade animals either. Except, he said, in the world which exists after the Chet of the Mauritian, this was not a very wise way to run the world. And the Rabbeinu Shalom did not choose to do so. Why, he said. Because in the world where the human beings' desires will be carried out ruthlessly. We lack the refinement of other Mauritian. The most dangerous thing, he said, is for us to place animal life on the same pedestal as we place human life. He said, if we were foolish enough to do that, he said, all the tyrants of history that had some glimmer of humanity within themselves would be kind to animals who are not a competitive force to them, and they would vent all their fury on people. This way, there inevitably comes a time when they want to show the decency, so they have to be, to some measure, kind to people too. They can't fulfill it with animals because we don't place animal life on the same pedestal as human life. So inevitably, there's a certain kindness and compassion that the human being receives from others that he would otherwise not receive from them in the ruthless world in which we live. So he said, in the world in which we live, the Torah wanted animal to be clearly at a rung below human beings. Human beings we don't kill, and animals we kill. But, he says, that's a license to use animal life. It's not a license to disrespect animal life. So the ultimate disrespect is that one slaughters the kid. Now, after you've slaughtered the kid, then what use is there for the milk? The Rebbe created the milk for the kid. Now you slaughtered the kid, so the milk is rendered useless. So now you'll take the milk and you use that to spice the kid. That's an arrogant disrespect. That the Torah did not allow us to do. And therefore, from Rav Kook's perspective, the Losef Vashel Gedi V'Chalei V'Imo is in fact emphasizing and underscoring the essence of what the Iser is. It's not just a poetic statement. It's the Hashkofa behind the Iser. Loinoa V'lo Yor, worthy of the great Rav Kook, Zecher Tzadik L'Vracha, such insight. So it's an Iser that we take very, very seriously. There are three laven that are involved with it. And in general, the whole area of Machalos Asuras is an Indian that we take very seriously. It delineates Kedushas Yisrael. The sanctity of the Jewish people is expressed, as the Chofetz Chaim writes in the preface of Sefer Nidrei Yisrael, principally in the Bein Adam Lamokom. It's true, the Torah insists that we have to be equally concerned about the Ben Odom L'Chaveru, but the sanctity, the uniqueness of Am Yisrael is expressed dafka through the Mitzvah Ben Odom L'Mokom. So it defines, it's one of the defining aspects of Kedushas Yisrael. And beyond that, the Ramchal tells us that Vinit may sambam, the Pasuk says, lest you be defiled by it. And Chazal tell us the way it is written also spells the tamtambam, that you become clogged, meaning your spiritual senses are clogged and throttled by the presence of Machalos Asuras. The neshama, it's Ruchnias antennas become jammed if we integrate within ourselves Machalos Asuras. So therefore, the Ramchal writes that any person with appropriate understanding of Machalos Asuras will run away from the Machalos Asuras no less than he runs away from a glass of poison. And the truth is, if we consider what the Ramchal is saying, we should run away from it even more than we run away from a glass of poison. Chazal tell us that Godol Hamachtiyo Yesum Yahargo, a person that causes another person to sin is even worse than a person that kills someone else. Why? To kill someone else denies him Adam Hazeh, but he'll still get Adam Habum. But to be Machti, a person, to cause him to sin, causes a person to lose his Adam Habum. So Godol Hamachtiyo is far worse to cause him to sin, Yosef Me'ahava, more than he did get actually killing him. And on that scale, poison could deprive us of this world, but we could still be zoicha to the world to come. Machalas asuras is an assault on our ability to attain olam haba. So that's from our hashkafa standpoint. That's why we have this tremendous, tremendous kiyur in machalas asuras. Tremendous amount of kiyur. It's one of the mitzvahs that we expend the greatest degree of effort on. Do we have a shot in this laboratory? That's true. But do we expend a fraction of the effort in being careful about chakras as we do on kashas? Doesn't begin. Right? Almost the first thing we would imagine in a town that calls itself Jewish, besides a shul, it's a kosher butcher store, a kosher food. It's the Aleph. Because we can't access the ruchnius of the Torah unless we're nizer and machalos asuras. Now, I just want to touch upon a number of points which are very easy to overlook in Vasa v'Cholof. Now, one of the problems that we suffer from in our generation is we're sort of in between, where on one hand, we don't have the simple faith in the Messiah of our grandparents and great-grandparents. And we don't necessarily have the knowledge of great Talmidei Chachamim. Now, either of those two would suffice in the following area to keep us out of trouble. But we're at neither end of the spectrum. And our grandmother, our great-grandmother may not have known why she had a power of a knife. She didn't know anything about the lumdus of Bosom Cholov and how it works in Dovah Charif. But she knew. You had to have a power of a knife. And you cut an onion with a power of a knife. You cut a lemon with a power of a knife. You cut a pickle with a power of a knife. Lumdus theory she didn't know. What she was supposed to do, she knew very well. Great Talmidei Chachamim know not only what they're supposed to do, but why they're supposed to do it, and what the nuances of it are. But we live in a generation which, to the largest extent, is in the middle, unmoored from the traditions of earlier generations, but not yet fully at the point of being great Talmidei Chachamim in the area of Bosa v'Cholof. So what begins is the following process. So listen, we learn enough in yeshiva to know that generally speaking, the way to get into trouble with Bosa v'Cholof is with hot things. If you spill cold milk on a cold pot, on a cold flay sugar pot, so you just take cold water and you rinse it off and life goes on, nothing happened. So we are rather well integrated that something being hot is a necessary step. Well, it does say lo sevashel, don't cook it. So the heat cooking is an elementary part of the Yisra Bosa v'Cholof. So if it's cold, well, then I seem to have circumvented the Yisra. So since a knife is, if I'm going to use a knife just to cut cold things, so what's the problem? I can have a flashing knife. I can have, who in the world needs a power of a knife for what? It's cold, that's all. So there are two mistakes inherent in this. Number one, we have a principle of the cutting of a dovah charif, something that's sharp, an onion, a garlic, a lemon, a lime, a pickle. Now when we cut something sharp, even if everything is cold, but it has an effect, it brings forth a tam. Same way that heat brings forth tam. At least could they cleep a little bit. At least that much. Or even more could they natila, I think it's a more accurate statement of it. Not could they cleep, but could they natila. So first of all, if I take a flay sugar knife and I cut an onion, So the Rama says, Lechatchila, I should consider the entire onion fleishig. That is not just a chumrah. According to the Chassam Sofer, we're getting involved in issues of deraisa. Now, there's a second surprise that lurks in this halacha. Normally speaking, we have a few safety valves in the bosom of a chalav. We have the fact that cold is usually helps us out. The second escape valve that we have is eino ben yoyma. If something hasn't been used in the last 24 hours, so then it does not have the ability to at least to transmit what's the flavors that have been absorbed in it in a way which would make anything awesome. So whereas if I took something milachik and I cooked it in a fleishig pot which had been used within 24 hours or some type of fleishigs, so that food is non-kosher. Whereas if I took a pot that had not been used for hot fleishigs in 24 hours and I cooked a cup of milk in it, the milk is kosher. So this is one of our great escape valves in the system of osa v'cholov of eino ben yoyma, if it hasn't been used in the last 24 hours. The problem is that this escape valve doesn't work when it comes to a davar charif. Normally we say that whatever flavor may exist does deteriorate over time. But when it comes to a davar charif, the davar charif overcomes any deterioration which may have taken place. You know, in old china cups, you were able to see sometimes the absorbed flavor. When I started in yeshiva a few years ago, so I remember they had old china cups, and pretty much the china part on the top was worn away, like the earthenware inside was exposed. Now, it was very easy to get a glass of tea with those glasses. All you had to do was just put in hot water. You didn't even need tea essence. Drinking them over the lip of the cup, you tasted the tea. It had been used to so many thousands and thousands of glasses of tea that you didn't have to bother to put in a tea bag. Just sipping the water. Water always drinking from those cups. The water always tasted like tea. A light tea, but a tea nevertheless. Unmistakably so. So, when we're dealing with the davar charif, not only does it bring forth a tam without heat, but it even overcomes the difficulty of being more than 24 hours old. So what happens in effect is, so if I have a fleishig knife which has been used more than 24 hours ago, so normally if I start a latte with it, so nothing would happen because the flavor that comes out is a deteriorated flavor. But since that flavor is now going into something with a very strong taste to it, so the strong taste overcomes or hides any deterioration in the flavor. So therefore, we look at it, in fact, as a positive influence on what we have now. The rough side has been removed. So here we have an onion, which was cut now with a fleishig knife, and the onion is fleishigs. Now I put it into what's supposed to be a parva soup, into a milachik soup. Well, it's neither parv nor milachik. It's either fleishig. If it's milachik, the soup, then the soup is bosa v'cholov. And as I said, the Chassam Sofer says this is a din d'oraisa. So, not something to be taken very, very lightly. So this is one of the most fundamental mistakes which people make in kitchens nowadays.
You still have a bitl though, right?
Well, it's hard. You're not usually going to have bitl. You're not usually cutting enough that you're going to have bitl. You know, if you took it and you started in something, a soup, which was a davar charif, so it would be bottle. But cutting an onion, you're not going to have bitl. So this is a very, very severe problem. And it's a quick way to get into trouble in the kitchen. You can make a real mess. Because I can cut an onion with a fleishig knife, it's cold, put it in a milachik soup, put it into milachik plates. And in short order, I have a tray for pot, tray for dishes, without even trying. Without a piece of meat in sight. So this is a very fundamental aspect of the din of basar v'chala. Now, there's another question, and this just shows how far the problem goes. If I take now this onion, which is now fleishik, because I cut it with a fleishik knife, now I cut, take a power of a knife and I cut the onion.
Same onion.
Same onion. So what happens now? The onion is already fleishik. What happens to the knife? So the principal position that we have follows the Mogen Avraham and Siman Tov Nun Aleph, that the knife becomes fleishik too. That the quality of a sharp food is not only to bring forth tam from a knife, but it puts it in back into a knife too. So, as I said, the problem starts to spread very quickly. I took a fleishik knife and I cut an onion. Then I put it into the power of a food processor and I processed it. Well, now the blade in the food processor is now fleishik. So even if I washed it off, now I chopped up an onion to put into something which is not fleishik. It's parv. So I dump it into a milchik of food, but it's no longer parv, now it's fleishik. So the blight spreads quickly. You know, so this is one of the things we need to make sure doesn't happen. Because this is the quick way, the fastest way to have a real disaster in the kitchen. You know, it's hard to replicate this with the straight basar v'chalav. It's the subtlety of it which escapes us, which gets us into trouble. Yes?
What about sharp things, other types of sharp things, like sharp peppers, jalapeno peppers?
Yeah, sharp peppers, same thing. Sharp peppers, onions, garlics, lemons, limes, radishes, right? Leeks, scallions, all of these things. So we need to be very, very careful about this. That it is true, there is the sheet of the Chavos Das, that the Chavos Das says it cannot go back from the onion into the kelim. So at least if it really gets out of hand, the Rav has a trick in his back pocket, you know, to solve the problem.
If you wash off the surface of the onion, that doesn't help.
Does not help.
Inside.
It goes through. The Ramah passes the chatchila, the whole onion is considered fleishik. And at least b'diyeva g'day netila, which is a thick slice on each side of where the cut was. So we need to be, you know, the wisest course of action is he cut the onions with parv. And if you don't cut them with parv, take the onion and throw it in the garbage. The cost of the onion, the half an onion that's left, is a lot less than the cost of the havoc in the kitchen. And what you're going to wind up, the food you wind up throwing out, the dishes you have to not be able to kasha. So don't keep half onions around. And if you do have half onions or half lemons, cut them all with a power of a knife in the first place. Yeah. Following on the Mogen Avraham, that the Mogen Avraham says that the Dovah Charif, that the Dovah Charif can penetrate Kalim. So based on that, I've always paskened that what happens if you take a lemon on a power of a cutting board and a fleishik knife?
You can make the cutting board fleishik.
So I believe that it makes the cutting board fleishik, yes. So now, the next time you're going to cut a knife, an onion on it, with a power of a knife, you're going to have troubles.
How is this again? Power of cutting board with a fleishik knife, how does the cutting board become?
Because I smashed onion down into it. The onion, the same way the onion is nibble into the knife, the onion knocks
goes
down.
In and, you know, it goes in.
I push or knock all the way down to the bottom with it, so when it hits the bottom, the same way it goes into the knife, it goes into the board. The same dochka, the sakina. So, this is a halacha that we need to be very careful about. Now, there are other ways that we get ourselves involved, and things that we ought not to. As I said, usually, as I said, it stems that we lack Messiah. And we lacked Masaira. If we had Masaira, we would avoid most of these problems. The Masaira was well set up. Now, the halacha states that bread which was used with the fleisha gemil cannot be used with a hilsha gemil, and vice versa. So now the question arises, can I take the leftover challah from Shabbos and make French toast Sunday morning?
Now, that must already keep to make French toast Sunday morning.
What?
That was our
we keep
to make French toast.
Yeah, listen, I'm fully cognizant that challah is the best thing to make French toast. It's bond up.
No milk and
no
flesh pan. No milk, no use of milk, and put it in a flesh of a plant pan. You can have French toast.
Yeah, milk is not all that good.
Yeah, it's like having a steak dinner without the steak, or, you know. So, typically, we're not supposed to take the bread and move it from the fleishig gemil to the milch gemil and vice versa. Why? Because we're concerned that it might have been handled with hands which are not 100% clean. And therefore, the piece of challah from Shabbos may have a little bit of grease on it. So, Rav Moshe, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, put forth the following chiddush. He said, this is only true of the bread which was sliced to put out on the table, even in the bread basket on the table where everyone at the table takes from it. But the challah that's in front of the balabayas, which he didn't distribute it, and especially if he didn't cut it yet, so that, as long as he knows that he kept his hands clean, so we're not concerned. They never made a restriction on the use of that challah. Because that challah, people typically don't take challah from there. And if you do in your family, that everyone takes the challah from the challah board, then you have to be very careful, at least to cut off one more piece, you know. Most people probably don't touch the whole challah. I mean, if they're very hands-on and they touch the whole challah, then it's head to disappears. But if you're a little bit old-fashioned and the balabayas does all the slicing, and he knows that he was careful, so then you're allowed to be maker, and we should say, to use the leftover challah from Shabbos, let's say, for Sunday morning. But this is, again, it's an issue of zehirus in the din bosa v'cholof. To realize that it's not only in the obvious bosa v'cholof that this is true, but in the subtle interconnection of bosa and cholof that we also have problems.
The challah in the bakery, that's part of the challah at home, is usually in someone's oven, no? It's like you flake it anyway, or
whatever.
Something.
It depends. I am, I'm not makbid. No, I don't hold it there. As long as you don't put it directly on the rack, and you don't make it the same time you make the fleishiks, I allow for the challah to be used with milchiks.
Even if the oven is always powerful.
There's not no real zaya from a challah. So if you long as with the place that you put it down was, you know, on a pan, let's say on top of silver foil or something, that it was protected from anything which may have spilled on the rack, then you can use the challah. If it's not made simultaneously with fleishig, I tell people to open the oven, let any steam that's in there out, and after that they're allowed to use it, because basically anything left, there's not going to be any liquid left. It's going to, if there's any steam that hit the sides of the oven, it's going to burn up at that point. So you're not really, you don't really have anything there. And a challah is really not subject to produce much zeya, much steam in the first place. So mameila, I don't see the reason that it should be also. So
the French,
what?
With the French toast, wouldn't whatever amount of grease is on your hands be called the shishin to the challah?
It doesn't mean l'chatchila you're allowed to do it. You know.
Yeah, but if you made that French.
Probably it would be bottled, you know, once it doesn't, you know, it doesn't mix so evenly throughout the challah until you cook it. That's also part of the problem. So that's number one. Now let's talk about another subtle case.
Is there a duchah sakina with a rolling pin rolling out dough on a flaking counter?
No.
They want to make the challah.
No, nor is it not a dova charif anyhow. So you need duchka plus a dova charif. Now, another way to get yourself quickly into trouble in the kitchen. We're trying to give all the aids and said, do things the fast way. If spices, you should do one or two things. If you use spices, both for fleishiks and milachiks, the best thing is to have separate spices for the milachiks and the fleishiks. Or to create a practice that you never pour the spices directly into the pot. Pour the spices into a spoon, not over the pot, and then with the spoon, dump the spices into the pot. But don't dump it directly. Why not?
That's a hot pot.
Hot pot, yeah. Why? Because we have the steam that's coming up. So I put it usually in close proximity to the pot when I pour spices in. And now I have hot steam from milachiks or fleishiks that's coming and entering the area of the spices. So there's at least lechatchila. I don't know, I'm not saying b'di'evit also, but at least lechatchila, one shouldn't do it. It's a simple zahirus of meticulousness and the observance of basar v'chalav that it shouldn't be done. In commercial settings, a b'chlal don't allow it. I insist in the commercial settings where they have, you know, milachiks and fleishiks, health related, whatever, that they have separate spices for the milachiks and fleishiks. Had a question?
Would you have the same problem with a hot water spigot that would be used?
A hot water spigot. So hot water spigots, lechatchila, you should not, if you have, let's say, a hot cocoa, which has milachiks in it, you shouldn't get it too close to the spigot. Either the best possibility is really to put it into a power of a cup, and then for the power of a like a power of a glass, really, and from a power of a glass, dump it into the milachiks, not in proximity to the spigot. B'di'evad, I think it's bottle. You know, how much could it be? It's a small amount that could have reached the pot, and there's enough water in there that I can't see where it's not going to be bottle. But it's lechatchila, one has to be careful about it. And especially one has to be careful not to splash. You know, it's oftentimes people are not careful and they splash from the cocoa or the hot coffee, they add some hot water and it splashes back up on the pot. As I said, b'di'evad, I believe it's butter. Is that enough over there to make it awesome? But it's not lechatchila.
Wait, with the spices. Let's say a person doesn't have milchik, they only have fleishik and parv in their house. They don't eat milchik. So they put the spices close to it, and then with the steam, and it goes up, and now it becomes fleishik. Then they can't eat milchik afterwards?
No, that fleishik, you know, you asked a question. Let me amplify this question. It's a very interesting question. When I came to Chaim Eli's Chasana, Los Angeles, a few years ago. The year was 1985. Yeah. Kids are... We're not getting wrong younger, Myron Schlanger. What? I mean, 2005. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I misspoke. 2005, yeah. Excuse me.
No, we're not getting younger.
Still not getting younger.
No,
yeah. His breast was 85
now. A little kalponim. So when I came to the Chasana, I have a cousin who's married to my first cousin. He's a huge Talmud Chacham, and he's one of the Rabbeim in the Valley Torah Center. He's a Lakewood Talmud. So he came over to me at the Chasana, and he asked me a shayla, what I hold. So the shayla is, for example, let's say you take... you know, when a yeshiva, you come down and they're serving fleishiks, and you want the rice, you want the French rice, they're not interested in the fleishiks. But, you know, listen, inevitably some of the kids took the spoon from the chicken and that's what they took the rice with. So it's very likely there's mixed in a little bit of fleishiks into the rice. So what's the status of that rice? So obviously you can't eat it with milachiks, that's for sure. In that regard, the rice is fleishiks. However, I told him, you don't have to wait 6 hours. So he asked me, why not? So I told him, it's a shach. The shach says that if you have a pot that was somewhat dirty, and there was no bittul b'shishim, and you cooked in it, and then you ate the food from it, so that's fleishig of food, but you don't have to wait 6 hours. So So I said, the cheshbon, the lomdis is the following, that if you want that flavor, in other words, even though I added a fleishig flavor because I wanted some sauce in the rice, that's why I put it there, then you have to wait 6 hours for that. That you can't get away with. But if it's a flavor that I was not per se interested in, it just wound up there, and I happened to ingest it, that part I never went to make me wait 6 hours. That's the way I understood the Shach. I believe when Moshe Feinstein Zatzal understood the Shach that way too. So he told me that they were hacking because there's a very choshev yid in Los Angeles, Rav Eidelitz. And Rav Eidelitz had told them this psak. They all respect him very deeply. He's a big Talmud Chacham. But they wanted to hear. He said, yeah, Rav Eidelitz told us the same thing. It was a big chiddush to us. We wanted to hear, you know.
But you're talking about when it's just flavor, not actual meat.
Yeah, no, even if they could have it, the Shach says it's meluchlich. It could even be tiny little pieces.
Then you've eaten fleishigs. How do you get around that?
That's, you know, it's betaruvus. Inadvertently, I don't know if they asked it. So they didn't ask it, such a thing. The Shach says the pach was meluchlich. So if it's meluchlich, you could have more than just tam.
Yeah.
But at kedai kach. Now remember, that we're machmer that tafshel shel bosor to wait 6 hours. But that's not a din of the Gemara per se, so you know it has limitations. You know, the genius in Psak, and that's the difference between the real Pesachim and the dabblers. The genius in Psak is knowing where to get off. You know, you can get carried away with anything and make up who knows what. To know where to draw the line and say, Ad Khan, this is as far as we go with this Chumrah, and this past, this is too much. That's the sphere of great Pesachim. So that's...
Rabbi Breuer always used to say, it's very easy to say no. Kuntz is being able to say yes.
Yeah, they say that when Rav Simcha Zelig, the Dayan of Brisk, came to Brisk, Rav Chaim was the Rav when he came to Brisk. So Rav Chaim told him the following. He says, I want you to pask in the din. You should not pask in chumras. Just your job is to pask in the din. I don't know if the Brisker were always so eye to eye with his dinner. He used to say to Yestem, he was a very big meikle, relatively. So I used to ask him, why he's so meikle? So simple as that. If I learn the halacha, it's mutter. You want me to answer it? So this is the inyan of spices.
In terms of the spigot, in like a yeshiva setting where there's no way to ensure that not everybody's careful about that, that's already a bidiyavit
situation. That's a bidiyavit already, yeah. It's a bidiyavit situation.
Is there any reason then for one to be careful, being as it's, even for his own, being as it's a pasha that everyone else has done it already?
Yeah, you could be meikle, it's bidiyavit already.
We're not even to be careful not to put his hakoko directly.
That you shouldn't do.
It's too late already.
Listen, maybe it didn't happen today. You don't have to contribute to the problem. In life, they say if you're not part of the solution, then you're part of the problem. Don't be part of the problem.
Is there not, I mean, if it's a plastic spigot or a metal spigot?
No, not the way we pask it. The chassidim, I'll let the chassidim try to figure this out for themselves.
What was the word?
If the spigot often has plastic at the end. Oh. That doesn't make for a difference.
So the best thing would be to pour it into hot water, just
into a plain glass. And then, you know, don't bring the milchiks or the fleishiks, whatever it may be, in close to the pot.
So I wanted to clarify one thing with going back to the parva knife. Is it specifically a din in the fact that it's a knife, or that's just a mitzias?
It's a din that you cut with it, whatever you cut with.
If you took a liner, so saying this chavrif, and you put it into, you know, squeeze it against the side of a milchik mug.
It would not do the same thing.
So it's dafka din.
Yes. It has to be cutting and charif. Now, another thing we have to be careful about is splashes. It's especially when you fry, but even if you're cooking big pots of food, you have to clear the area. Don't have parv milchik pots around the stove when your wife is cooking the chicken soup Friday afternoon at full steam ahead. And certainly not, and if you're frying something, then you should clear the area of anything that's other than what, if it's a fleishik, so get all the parav and all the milachiks out of the area. Frying almost always fleishes.
Yeah.
That's the nature of the beast. Now, splashing is a serious matter. If a splash goes from a hot pot into a cold pot, so I have a cold frying pan, milachik, next to a hot fleishig pot, then I'm frying schnitzel, and a little spritz, a little oil shot from the hot pot into a cold pot, cold milachik pot. The cold milachik pot has to be kashered.
Inside, the outside?
Wherever, it doesn't make a difference where it hits. It has to be kashered.
It goes from the out through the outside. We're
not
mechalik,
outsides, insides. The halacha makes no such distinctions.
Really?
Yeah.
You're frying fleishig schnitzel and some of it splashed, which it usually does.
On a
milachik
pot, that milachik pot has to be kashered. So that's, you know, that was some. Now,
the stovetop.
We'll come to that. We're not up to the stovetops yet. So, let me tell you two of the coolest at least. The Beis Meir and Siman Tzadik Beis, it's quoted on the side of the Shulchan Aruch, says the following, that if the pot is hot, in other words, if it hits a hot pot, especially if the hot pot has liquid inside, if you hit a hot pot with liquid, so then you don't need to kasher the pot. You don't need to kasher the pot. Why? The milachik pot. Why? He makes the following kasher, very interesting kasher. He says, according to the Shach, the problem with the splash is that maybe some of the milk got stuck in the pot and didn't dissipate in the pot itself, into the food. So maybe it stuck. It got, went into the wall of the pot and didn't go anyplace. So now the next time I cook, there'll be milachiks in the wall of the pot. But it's only a suffix, he said. It might, in fact, in a hot, but it may dissipate altogether. So he says, now... Then he pulls a trick, the Beis Meir. Great place can have all types of things up their sleeve. So he says the following. That we have a principle of Ein Mevatel Issur L'Chatchila. I'm not allowed to use something where the end product will be mutter because of bittel. You know, if it happens to become something happened and it's bittel, it's one thing. But to start off a process where the end process is going to be mutter because of bittel, I'm not allowed to do. So, the Shulchan Aruch has the following case. The Shulchan Aruch says, let's say you got a little splash, a little milchik splash on a fleishig pot. Well, he says, it's a couple of drops. So listen, you're never going to make less than a cup of soup in that pot. So whenever you'll make it, even if the milchik is there, it's still bottle. It's going to be bottle with shisham easily. So the Shulchan Aruch says that's called that it's done b'shoifi. That is much, much more than the milchiks that have arrived on the scene. So the Shulchan Aruch says it's mutter. So the Achrayim disagree with the Shulchan Aruch, and they say, no, that would be Mevatlan Issur L'Chatchila to do that. That would be Mevatlan Issur L'Chatchila to do that. You're not allowed to do that. I have to get it out. I know I can have kasher it and take it out. But the Beis Meir says, let's say there's a case that it's only a suffix. Here I don't know for sure the pot is treif. Maybe according to it's actually not treif. It's only a suffix of the wheel, machmer is suffix according to the Shach on a splash. And the halach is by a suffix isa, there is no din of ein mevatlan isa l'chatchil. So the Beis Meir says there's a tziruf of these two factors and a hot pach with liquid inside, and there's a little splash, I don't have to be mad, just wash off what's splashed on the outside, and life goes on. So that's one out.
That's
to be it could be simach on the Beis Meir, yes.
Is that only if the splash occurred below water level or something?
If the pot is covered, there's no such thing as below the water level or above the water level. It's all the same.
Let me explain again why hot is warm or cool here.
Because if it's hot, if it's cold, then where did the bleah wind up? In the pot. If it's hot, maybe it went out into the food on the other side. and dispersed. Shach says it's a suffix, that's what we're machm.
It's a full, it's not just hachar, it's full
or
something.
Or if it's, like I said, if it's covered, then it's considered the same as a full pot. A covered hot pot is the same as a full pot. Because it has steam on the top.
But if you have like a little layer of oil, you need enough to be mabakta. Is that as far
as... No, beyond that, you need, you will not deal... Sure, there's going to be enough. One little tiny drop, how much do you, what do you put into this pot?
The walls of the pot? Or cause
no, the stuff what's in the pot. Normally, you're going to have enough to be mabakta a couple of drops.
So you have to have enough liquid to be mabakta.
Yeah.
So let's say the milk pot is empty.
No, a hot empty pot wouldn't work.
And then if you have, you're frying the schnitzel, and next, right next to it on the next burner, you have an empty milchik pot.
Then you're in trouble. Then if it splashes, you have to kasher, no matter what.
Then you do have to kasher.
Yes. If it's hot, it has a hot liquid inside, that's just either it's full, or it's covered. I don't want to go into the other, you know, other cases. Then the Reis Meir says you don't have to kasher it.
But if it's empty, then it has to be kasher.
Yes. Now, let me tell you one more trick. This is a controversial trick. But this is the way that Rav Moshe Zatzal learned the Bi'ur Agro in Siman Tzadik Kesef Katan Yud. In Yoredeya. He learned the Pshat and the Agro in the following fashion. That half a part of a pot that got splashed with fleishiks. So mitzad din, I should be able to cook something even today and eat it with milchiks. Why? Because there's what's called not bar not. There's one flavor went into the walls of the pot, and now the second not came out and went into the potato was still mutter, and then I want to eat it after that. So after the second night, the second flavor was still mutter, should not make me usser because of a question of the, to consider it fleishiks, for example. So if we have a chumrah that we're machmer anyhow until we get to three knots, or two knots we're machmer. So now, so the Gro says the following. I mean, I think it's the simplest reading of the Gro too, the way Rav Moshe reads it happens to be. So the Gro says the following. Why is it? Where did we learn the halach of kashering from? Kashering Kalim, parsha of Klei Midyan, in the Torah. Now Klei Midyan is only was the necessity of kashering was only for the pots that had been used within 24 hours. If you waited more than 24 hours, then midiraisi, you don't have to kasher. Because after 24 hours, the tam can't make anything awesome. So why do we have to kasher after 24 hours? So the gzeira midrabbanan, that if they allowed us to use a pot after 24 hours, we might make a mistake and use it within 24 hours. Eino banyomo, otu banyomo. So the Gro says that if the power of a pot is now an eino banyomo, so he says, so you can't make a gzera eino benyomo otu benyomo when the benyomo itself is mutter mitzara din is only also because of a chumra. So how could you now extend that and the eino benyomo is not going to be also otu benyomo and benyomo mitzara din is mutter, the grosses. So the grosses in such, that's the way Rav Moshe learned, shot in the gross. So he said that you don't have to kasher. You don't have to kasher the pot. You just wait 24 hours. This flesh, this part of a pot that got a little splash on it, wash it off, wait 24 hours, and it's back in fine shape again. Now, what's important to note, and with this I'll end for today, is you can't use this with part of a knives. Knives, this trick doesn't work. Why? Because knives, as I said earlier, have the din that even if it's an eino benyomo, and you cut a double charif, which is common to cut, you cut an onion with it, it's the same as a benyomo. So then you're first going to really get in trouble. You can't get the eino benyomos by a knife. So a knife, you always have to kasher. It will hold it at this point. Or really so.
I'm sorry, if the fleishik schnitzel that you're frying goes on to a par...